Hello, hi. So this poem is called Glimpse. In the car, the sound is outside, parallel and echo, leaving behind, driving inside. The glasses are closed. Two children are screaming each other for fun on the video, and another one is crying as the family got lost. Autumn is mild, can't yet taste that first winter portion. The traffic lights look suspicious, armed soldier on a mission. Down by the cliff, if you just want to count the stones, after the eye cannot was unexpectedly becoming crunchy food. The mist brings to a different way. The park is closed, opening times from 8 until 5. In the softness of a breath, the time is light. Only once distracted, life truly happens. Look after the dust to see those sparkling little gems of light. Thank you. Thanks.
Thank you, Antonio. And next up, we'll go across the table from you to Alicia Figant.
I think my favorite thing in the world is people's face as they pronounce my last name. Like, I love it. Like, I relish in it. And you were dead on. So there's a couple of introductions to this poem. First of all, it was... I suppose a prompt. So I had a friend and we used to slip under each other's doors little prompts for poems, and he asked me to write a poem about all the places that I've slept, which is a lot of weird places. So this poem is kind of, yeah, based off of that, so written over several weeks, and also sort of a, yeah, listening to Tom's poem about imperfect people. I haven't edited it since I wrote it, so this is called Places I've Slept / The Absurdity of My Teens and Early Twenties. I have slept in the craggy space between two hostile foam mattresses. I folded myself up like a cardboard moving box. I have slept nestled up against the safest thing I know, the breast of my mother dressed in gold. I was pressed between the electric blanket and an old depression bed. I have slept on the concrete floor of a West Cork Celtic Tiger new build, and I shivered until my teeth chipped. Whether from cold or the excitement of alone, I still can't tell. I've slept on a sticky, shameful aromatherapy leather sofa blasted with fever heat. I could smell traces of rotten chicken soup beneath the eucalyptus oil and your need of me. I've slept in the bumpy, unnecessary and battering back of an ambulance. I savoured the feeling of wearing a neck brace like a pillow, breath slightly broken and dizzy by chance. I've slept with my whole body clothed only in cat, dog and human hair. I woke to a snaggle tooth and a gun. I have slept, grief exhausted, on a bed of bluebells and a fisherman's net. I was tingling with gratitude for the quiet and graceful release of a wet scream. I've slept on an ex-apartheid conveyor belt. I felt drunk on the weariness of having to unlearn another half-truth they taught me in school, watching my own ignorance melt. And I've slept under a sacred oak in perfect solitude. I clenched a fast-cooling bottle of hot water and acorns between my life-fueling thighs. I've slept in a French dorm room that screamed 404 error on the door. I realized I hadn't felt my left arm for an entire month, maybe more. I have slept with newly grown legs in a brother-built bunk where I cried for scarcity. I cried for abundance. I have slept wrapped in scarves, duck feathers, and moldy ghosts. I found my body squirming away from the greasy plates and insincerity, but they stuck to me. I have slept on the well-worn floor of a German hermit where I was glad of having memorized your phone number and some platitudes about ancient Greece, and I learned to fix them. And I've slept in the boot of a green Nissan Micra, somewhere in the wet womb of the Burren, where I learned that oil and water separate, no matter how hard you try to mix them. I've slept covered in glacier mints in a hotel cupboard. I learned that vodka and Beamish separate, no matter how hard, how really, really hard you try to make them friends. I've slept face down in a Glaswegian field full of vapes and Lewis Capaldi. I vowed that next time a bee stung me like this, I'd be sober, dignified, dressed, and ready for bed. And I have slept 4,000 feet above sea level in a purple tent, where I danced my love for my ladies and the devil into the Alaskan rock. And I have slept, well, I might add, in an ex-sex hotel with mirrors above the bed. I noted that there was no space for a desk, but that the big bathtub did the trick. And I have slept on a quivering deck in La Maddalena. Spaciousness knocked me on the nose until I felt quite clearly seasick. And I slept in the Sardinian cafe where we awaited the train. I found myself sticky with tears, sea salt, sweat, and an affogato that I spilled. It was here that I was told that I've slept enough. I never managed to sleep beside you, ever waking with dreams of tomorrow. I couldn't find the peace I needed in the midst of the unsaid. But I trust now in the spoken link we've forged. I trust that I'll find it yet.
That was a mighty prompt from your friend and an even mightier poem. Well done. Thank you so much for sharing. Next up, can we have Seamus Harrington?
Thanks, Rosie. It's that time of the year again. Jammin'. Snare drums rattling, trombone zoom, tenor sax screaming, double bass boom. Guitars twanging from electric heights, chimes still tinkle to muted lights. Silver flutes tootle, percussions brush. Clarinets warble to alto sax gush. Trumpet calling, tambourines jing, hi-hat lifting to cowbells ring. The sirens blare, notes so shrill, harmonicas bleat to whistles trill. Banjo's rat-a-tat will curtly reply to conch shell echo of piccolo high. Xylophones hit, but tubas rude. Bongo's rhythm, get in the mood. Keyboards persisting, notes so brash. French horns burping, cymbals crash. Oboes blending as fiddles in sync. Give jiving cats no time to think. Baby, that's jazz.
Thanks a million, Seamus. And next up, we'll have JJF.
I want to write a poem, but I don't know where to start and I don't know where to go. I want to write a poem good enough to make 30 people pay €8 to come to my next poetry show.
Shout out pros and woes.
I want to write a poem about how I still miss both my exes. And I want to write a poem because sometimes I still feel like an outsider 10 years after moving to Europe from Texas. I want to write a poem because life's just a tiny little riddle, kind of fucked up in the middle. And I want to write a poem because I'm confused a lot of the time. But if I fix my posture, straighten my spine, make sure it all rhymes, I'll probably be fine. Thank you. You guys just picked it up and put it down. I appreciate that. I want to write a poem that's so thoughtful, considered, and thorough, it turns words into actual euros. I want to write a poem because I think there's probably no God. And I want to write a poem because I hate my damn job. I want to write a poem because I'm looking at my 40s, 50s, and 60s. And I want to write a poem because I want to capture all of my eras and bring all of my ages with me. I want to write a poem because I feel alone, but I want to be honed in, zoned in. I want to write a poem so I can release dopamine and serotonin. And I want to write a poem because at least I'll be at peace knowing the next words will come in a moment. And I want to write a poem, and I think I just did.
You just did. Just wrote a poem. Well done. Now we're going to go online for Zoom, and we'll have Pam, please.
Thank you. Okay, this was birthed in the wake of the election results, and I've got a working title, a handle. I was perched on the seat of my cousin Ricky's bike, legs and feet dangling. I gripped the handlebars. I was 9 and too short to reach the pedals. Ricky just turned 14, steadied the bike. He was my book-loving cousin, the one who didn't talk much, the one who didn't mind me tagging along on hikes, the one who taught me about the trees and the people that lived in the Cumberland Mountains before us in his quiet, few words manner. He gave the bike a push and said, pedal. I pumped the pedal standing up like I seen him do. I loosened my right hand a little, leaned the bike to the right, and thrust my left leg down. I wobbled with the first shift to the left lean and right leg thrust. I didn't have time to be scared. Ricky ran alongside me hollering, pedal! A rhythm commenced, imprinted from hours of watching Ricky and my other boy cousins jump on their bikes and race off down the street. I pumped faster and faster, my heart beating with a sense of power and freedom in a big circle in our mamaw's front yard. I tired after a while. How do I stop? I puffed in short breaths. Push back on the pedals, Ricky said. Sometimes instructions just don't take with me, or maybe I was just too tired, too short, but I couldn't make that happen. I coasted. The slower the bike went, the more it wobbled, until it wobbled me in the arms of my waiting cousin. The next time my out-of-town cousins came to visit with their bikes, I ran to Ricky's bike, eager to join. Eddie, just a year older than me, said to Ricky, "She's not coming." "Why not?" he asked. "Because she's a girl." What's that got to do with it? But seemed it had a lot to do with it. At 9 years old, watching the backs of my cousins backing off to found adventure, I knew that somehow being born a boy came with a birthright of freedom that I did not have. Thank you.
Thank you, Pam. And you know, we really feel for you there in America as well, as a shocking result. So keep writing those poems because they do offer solace. And I just have to say, I could listen to you all day. You know, you should have an audio book or something, because I really
thank you.
Thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you for your kind words.
So next we'll have Patricia Walsh.
This is called Faithfully Departed. My homicidal rage betrays an inkling of this happy voodoo in an earlier heaven. out in the cold and intrusive existence, cooked from scratch, better insidiousness. I watch from close ranks a riotous check. This threatened death, a welcome concession. Marriage foretold, a pure prediction abiding. I avoid the obvious in detrimental eye. I see perfectly the healthy situation. To overdo the kiss, regretfully slain. I initiate the head-wrecking art, perchance. A stuttered time associated with another poison. An embarrassment all, not manly enough, to eschew the trivial workings of a wrong kiss. A rubbish valid points in coarse conversation, to dish through inquiries of a hearty association, over some absences, holding it fast forever, the bedrocked fantasies of a better life. A watch to scratched glass, lonely crowded, temporary elation remains the same. Hurtled through the gamut of an experimental gaze, more than pleasantries humoured above else. Seated in exile, I cry in my own volition. A startled fact keeps the wishbone down. Thanks.
Thank you, Patricia. Now we'll have the very feisty and saucy Catherine Ronan.
What, Catherine?
Thank you, Ruthie. Now, the worst thing about going to Coventry is being sent back from Coventry. But if we produce this, well, Ovale produced this fantastic chapbook. And I'm going to read one of the poems that I read in Coventry. It's in the chapbook. First night. I put my hand over my left ribs. You were there in a small box for broken bones. I inhale the memory of your caramel, coconut, oily musk in yesterday's bed. I refuse to change the sheets as white noise, silence, roars in treacle darkness. Tell me, my love, how does the sun rise when the moon heaves in grief? Thank you.
Thank you, Catherine. And now we'll have Mona Lynch, please.
I'll just bring you down to earth after Catherine's eroticism. My mother had seven brothers, and I've taken it on myself to try a poem about them. I have two of them here. A short one about one who died at 22, and another, he died at 90. The first one about Thomas is about the Second World War. It's called Telegram. On the day he left, she reminded him to pack his clothes brush. Nothing could stop him, though he lied about his age in his first application. They eventually accepted him, her youngest son, handsome, in his navy uniform. Letters arrived intermittently, black blocks hiding his precious words. A sepia photo with a group of friends on board his beloved HMS Repulse. She toiled uphill past his school on Strawberry Hill, 14 days before Christmas. Urgency in her step, puddings to boil, fruitcake to bake in the Bastable oven. Captain Tennant held his head, pride and confidence in his men, and the accompanying HMS Prince of Wales, but no match for the torpedoes coming at them, a swarm of angry bees. She sat by the open fire, her face buried in a towel, a telegram hung from her fingers. This is a quick one about another one of the brothers, Jimmy. I watched him, silhouetted against the sky, his cottage above the road, his garden higher again, girdled with currant bushes, black and red, gooseberries too. Sunshine blazed as with rhythmic strokes he swings the spade, clearing the drills, rising to the spuds, regimental rows of cabbage, speckled with ravenous caterpillars, fern-like foliage of carrots, hiding juicy tubers. We sat on upturned drums, catching up with our worlds, breathing in the fresh scent of the earth. He scrapes his plug tobacco, fills his pipe and puffs, his soul at one with his garden, a slow world of dignity, respect. I sat by his bed on his last day and told him of the huge beetroot I was given that day by a neighbour. Eyes closed, he whispered. No beetroot should be bigger than an eating apple.
Thank you, Mona. It's so good and important to remember those that went before us. We wouldn't be here without them. So thank you. And next we will have Cedric Bicond, please. Oh, he's gone. Cedric's gone. Right. So we will go to Zoom and Claire Duhi, or Duthi, if you would share a poem, please.
Hi, everyone. Have I got time for, is it just one poem or two poems?
Short poem.
If they're short too, yeah.
Yeah, I'll see. I tend to write short poems, so given that this is an Irish thing and it's roughly this time of year, so this is called The Insane Pain of the Banshee. The insane pain of the banshee, as she futures her future abandon, the deathbed, her mark paps. Twas always us, twas always so, in every generation, there is a chosen one. She alone bears the strain of the family fortune, wane one. She comes from her mother's womb, death before her. Right from the start, she says, she speaks us, my body is my mother's womb. My body in my mother's womb shall leap into the light lost in my mother's tomb. Thank you. And again, this next one is much more recent. It's called Lilith. I'm just finding it a minute. Hold on a second. Sorry to keep you waiting. Lilith, she who dares to open my mouth, she is the one who doth speak my innermost and darkness most truths. She is the one that turns from Jehovah. She is the irrepressible dark succulent mother, teacher, lover, mother of mine and thine. Few men turned to her, but she was within them too. She is a dark screeching owl of midwinter night. How I feel her might as she holds me tight. I dive deep into her pool, for she is nobody's tall. Thank you.
Thank you, Claire. Thank you. And thank you. Now we'll go back in the room with May J. Fast, please.
I'm almost nervous. Yeah, long story short, since this is actually a short poem I'll be doing, which is a nice contrast, because usually I just, my poems are just vomit and thoughts and feelings and extended passages. So so this one is just kind of about contradiction. You know, you grow up thinking someone as a child, someone's good or they're bad, and then suddenly you start feeling like you're a good person doing bad things, sometimes you feel like you're a bad person doing good things. And it's been one of my dilemmas in life, is trying to accept that I can be a very contrasting person within myself. So, first time memorizing a poem and reading it, so hopefully. Speak your free willed. Oh no, okay, sorry. Speak your free willed truth and preach to the choir. Dance to heaven's harp in the licks of hell's fire. Walk with your shadow under the light of the sun. Upkeep your rules, but don't forget to have fun. Seize the day as if it's your own. Thank the stars with soul-searching stares through the night. See the world in all its color. The world's not black and white. Yeah, sorry, thanks.
Thank you, May. Feeling the fear and doing it anyway, that's what it's all about. I think everybody gets nervous, and that's kind of part of it. So yeah, embrace them. And somebody once said to me that you can kind of change the conversation you have with yourself. Rather than telling yourself that you feel really nervous, you can say, I feel excited. So they're kind of similar energy, but one is a bit more positive. It doesn't make you want to vomit. Yeah. Okay, so anyway, here we go. For more nerves and getting things off your chest, can we please have Rosie Murphy?
Hello everyone. This is from a poetry collection that I've just written. And it's funny because I skipped all this phase. I kind of did an arseways that I wrote everything in a poetry cave. And now, like, this is my first open mic night. So, bear with. So this is just a love poem called Your Lips. I'm glad you entangled the beginning so the ice could start thinning and I could take a sip from those soft, playful lips. That first dip into the hot thrill, tighten your grip, hand on my hip, slip closer on impulse, quieten my muddling, fumbling hesitation as you bind and unwind and find the spot on my neck designed to make me hiss. I want to show you how you glow. How I glow when you hover close in this blaze that burns the night back to day when our mouths lock, lick and play. Fascinate each sense until I drown in you. Your grace, your face, a quick chase, this bonfire embrace, the bass thrumming, delicate as lace becoming, unbecoming. Undone, unsaid, unlocked, untamed, unerring, bearing, pairing, pouring forth from your lips.
Well, Rosie, I know it's maybe your first, but I hope it's not your last. Yeah. Please come again. Now we'll go back to the Zoom set people and invite Chris to read, please.
Hi, it's a really great night, by the way. This is a poem called Skype Family Robinson. It's about how my family tried to communicate during the lockdown. I'm not sure we'd really managed that beforehand, to be honest. Skype Family Robinson. We are not a science fiction family. We are children of traffic jams, spam salads and instant whip. We keep cupboards and cupboards under the stairs. Yet here we are jumping platforms, photographing passwords and community espionage. We are not a desert island family. We are route maps jotted on plain postcards, radio times cut out and keep. We store stamp hinges in tobacco tins for rainy days like these. Yet here we are learning languages at fingertip touches of virtual buttons, scrolls on tiny dictionaries. we are not pioneer spirits. We are Softly Softly, Dad's Army, and the Biederbeck tapes. We share rooms, but not eye contact, with large evasive mammals. Yet here we are spacewalking, making light of all these gravity pills. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris, and another voice for the audiobooks, I'd say. There's a job in there.
Yeah.
Can we go to Dáil Hardy now, please? I think you did.
About 5 years ago, Greta Thunberg was the first critic of the Yellow-Haired Men, and this poem is a villanelle. All things I can't write anything else except a villanelle, but anyway, this is it. A letter to the president from Greta. Why are you deaf? Why is it I can hear? Remove the earmuffs, a simple act. Do not pretend to listen. Do not dare. It's the economy, stupid. Don't you care? I must be brief. There is no time for tact. I know you are deaf and cannot hear. My childhood dreams were stolen, and my fear is that your empty words will go unchecked. You must be deaf if you cannot hear. Do not pretend you're listening. Do not dare to think your rhetoric will gain some respect from your children's, from my children's generation and their care. The threads are loosening now. That is the scare, that your crooked words have really tricked the hearing ones who said they could not hear. Why not tell it like it is? There is no if. Stand outside your minnows and their bluff. Noah's Ark is leaking, and my fear is the hearing ones will say they did not hear. Thanks.
Thank you, Dáil. And next we'll have Imasha Costa, please.
You assumed the hype really well. Thank you very much. Hello. A bit of context to this. I work full time as a journalist, and I deal a lot with breaking news, and this year has been difficult. So this poem is 2024 through the eyes of a journalist who is also trying to survive in this humanity that we're in. So the inner ramblings of my mind. 2024 will lead to consequences that we're yet to see from choices made by a large majority, by empires, by states. We've seen climate change take over countries where they have never seen fatal floods. Take the Middle East and Spain, people's lives being lost because big oil companies will not stop building pipelines, burning fossil fuels. Our planet is dying, and my generation is going to reap the rewards. I've seen democracy rise and fall, countries take a far right stance, stopping migrants from coming into the promised land, they say. Europe, who said they would be welcoming, Europe stopping them from entering their lands. Border policies creating hate, wars, anger, anguish, and loss. Democracy is what my generation and generations before mine have been fighting for. The right to be human, to have autonomy. Yet democracy has failed us in this world where capitalism and power have dominating, taking away the people's rights to be their true selves. There is desperation for power seeping into this world from world leaders across the board, and all we can do is watch. Elections, 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 country after country, socialism to capitalism, far left to far right, we keep voting in the same parties here in this country because of empty promises. Those that make us believe that a party in power for 100 years can bring change next time. My generation has been seeing a genocide unfold before their eyes. Palestinian children are not being allowed to live the beautiful life we have. Genocide after genocide, we need more weapons, more money, more military, more bombs. All eyes kept staring at an election unfolding in an empire. Yet children were still being murdered and no one could do anything to stop it. When will the world crashing and burning, literally burning, end? Murders, children's going missing, violence, drug wars and weapons. These are headlines I see every morning. These are headlines that come to me as I shut my eyes and go to sleep. How do I drown out what I call the worst of humanity? People are dying in the Mediterranean Sea, trying to cross a border we created. And yet, the only thing the world seems to care about is a swing state vote. Breathe. That's a lot. I forget to breathe. I switch off my screen, lock my keyboard away, and I sit and wait, trying to get on with my day. And I know the next day will not be any better. I love what I do. The stories I get to tell, but I wonder, will it ever stop? This pain, this suffering that I am seeing every day, will it really end? Will my generation finally be able to stand up and challenge those in power, or will we still be silenced? Will a revolution be on its way? Will we finally have a voice? Will we finally see the end?
Thank you, Imasha. Yeah. The right to be human.
Yeah.
So now we're going to go back online and we're going to have Massimo. Massimo.
Hey, always an honor to be here. Whoop, sorry. Give me 1 second. Okay, here we go. The open mic list is going long. Didn't want to take up time, so I chose the song. Want to be on the same time that the host is on. Want to be on the same time that Rosie's on. This song's about holding on, whether things are going right or they're going wrong. But it suggests that no matter what's going on, it's more about what I choose to focus on. Sometimes it seems like that, that doesn't mean it has to be like that, see. Sometimes it may seem like that, but that doesn't mean it has to be like that. If I don't like the dreams I have, I dream back to scenes in the dreams I laughed. The scenic path, I have seen that path. But I prefer a peace that lasts like peace at last. I try not to speak that fast, but have to keep time as the beat moves past. Can't make everything I speak exact, but try to speak truth that doesn't mean just fact. How can I say love, I need you back? How can I say peace, I need you back? But I just reach back for the truth in my memory to lead me back. Where are all of my people at? Bring all my old people back. But time doesn't freeze like that, though I'm not sure I always believed in that. The child I was is still me intact. The world I was born in still meets me back. I still feel the ground where my feet fall flat and have people I love who love me right back. You may say it's not sweet like that, that nobody's life can be a breeze like that. But I mean it, I am free like that, or at least in the moment choose to see like that. I may play, that doesn't mean I act. Real love is real. That's all I mean by that. Because sometimes it seems like this or seems like that. But that doesn't mean it has to be like that. Peace. Thanks for having me. Always.
Thank you, Massimo. You always lift the spirits. Next, can we have Constantine, please?
I am going to read the haiku poems. Haiku. I am sitting on an olive branch. I pray to God, let there be light. It's midnight, ring the bells. In each one of us there is a bell, tinkling or tolling. From the peace of flowers, from the flight of birds, we arose darkness and light. Red, yellow, blue, and more, flowers of all colors, keep me in your heart. Hello, my darling, hello. I meet you at the intersection. I thought it was just a happening. The woman of my dreams. I went to Hanover Street. I watched the movie. When I got home, I listened to the music, my friend's wife. And another poem. Yesterday, when I was young and the grass greener, I could catch the stars with my hand. The heavens opened to the earth. I went hand in hand with time yesterday when I was young. The last poem, Letter to Mother. I have many versions for this poem, Letter to Mother, but I will read the last version. Letter to Mother. Call me with your hands. A flame is burning. The joy of springtime is living. You taught me the way to school and back. I remember shyly as you used to lead me to the Lord, the Immaculate Mary.
Thank you, Constantine. And now we will have Philip Spillane.
Thank you very much. One. Nope, good, no feedback, that's all right. So I had the pleasure of collecting this from the City Library, the giant bagpipe drone, which is from my poem, Dunkettle Roundabout. They put in the lovely little purple book for me. Absolute pleasure to collect this. What a very proud of it. My name's inside as well. Thank you. I collected from the Cork City Library and the giant bagpipe drone, which I used to describe the Chacklidge Tunnel in that poem. And if you don't mind, I'm going to say it tonight with my obsession with motorways. I swear if I lived in a forest, there'd be loads of poems about forests and trees and woods and nature, but instead I go up and down the motorway. So there's loads of poems about motorways. And let's jump right into it. There's one quote in this that I stole from Elisa, but it's a tribute to how incredible she is and how inspiring she is. So I asked her permission. So the Dunkettle Roundabout. The morning smog spools over the chined dolmens as the soft rain spiritually blesses a herd of bypassing cars. As it's a motorway, the petrified remains of a serpent, the same one St. Finbar vanquished 100 years ago, 100 miles across, all coiled, collected and complicated. As the dawn chorus is buried under splitting, moaning combustible engines vibrating across all the regions of era. I bullet to the chocolate tunnel, that giant bagpipe drone, and come out the other end, stopped, bathed in red, under traffic lights. It's the brink of the Dunkettle roundabout. It's the centre of chaos where all the five forces fight and spin. Now, if Maeve's forehead is in Sligo, her right ankle sticks out there. If the Downer's breasts are in County Kerry, her outie belly button comes out over there. When the women of Sliva Mon fought and won battles, and why the dog that built the giant tomb was way to County Mead. Now, when the light swaps to green, I hurl into the merry-go-round, and while driving autopilot, I slip into memory. The pub was packed, my pint was in the right hand, as my longtime friend comes and embraces the left. She whispers something soft into my ear. But I wake up in a daydream on the bones of man and notice that the nature has found a way. As a single seagull flies above, the hooded crow hops across the hard shoulder, the fox remains melt into the tarmac. As she said to me, as we lie here and listen, you could hear the humming of the world. This all took 2 minutes while leaving the Dunkettle roundabout.
Did you leave this as a gift for me? Did you? Thanks. Thanks, Philip. Congratulations on the book. Amazing. Yeah, well done.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
And, so next we will have the lady who you robbed the line from. So, Elisa Sabadin, please.
Thanks. Thanks, Phil. I love it. Like, I don't care what anybody takes from me. I love it. This is a short romantic poem to my big love. After Lawrence. Wide open. I can't sleep when the moon is turned on. I can't even sleep when I remember the moon is outside. So close, wide open. Behind my window pane, madness. I need the absolute darkness of oblivion. If the moon exists, my body is a string picked at and picked at by its ginormous hands. There's no snooze button on this alarm clock that never stops ringing. The moon. Every woman is a mistress to the moon. Every man will write poems to the moon. My moon, my muse, my lotus blooming in the middle of the sky. My mother watching me as I don't fall asleep. That's right, child. Keep your eyes open, wide, like mine. Take it all in, the madness, the murder of the night. Everything is love and death, and that's just fine. Yet I'd give my head all up to be a good wife to the moon. I'd be the housewife of the sky, dusting the stars, lulling galaxies to sleep as I curl up with my moon, dreaming dreams of moon.
There's a beautiful moon tonight, actually. Waxing gibbous, only a couple of days away from a full one. So, take it in when you walk outside the door. And now we will have Latam Poulas, please.
Hi. Elisa signed me up. I didn't know I was reading. If you have a couple of seconds, I'll find something. I haven't written in a while, and last time I was to at Ovale, it was back in, when it was weekly, so it's been a while. Oh, yeah. The problem is a lot of my poetry is very long, and I don't think anyone has that kind of time. Every year on your birthday, you called me first, before I could wish you anything, and you tell me to go take photographs. When I was 12, I fell down a flight of stairs. You broke your arm, and all the older kids at school wrote their name on the cast. This is not a photograph, but it is a memory. The first time I'll meet you, these things won't have happened yet. Every year on your birthday, we'll go to the photo booth in the mall. We'll take 16 silly photographs, and one of them would usually be good. I'm 12 and running around the building to show you I can come out from the other side, and you're telling me I'm going to miss the bus. The first time I'll meet you, it will be as if you never asked me to talk, as if I've been waiting for it. Every year on your birthday, we'd look at the mall photos and you'd say, "This is how you'll remember me." I'd say, "Until next time." And you'd say, "One of these times, that won't be true anymore." What is a photograph faithful to when the light makes one side of your face look bigger than the other? What is a memory faithful to? The first time we'll meet, it will be as if we've never always been in love.
Thank you, John, and thank you, Elisa, for sneakily signing him up. I think what are friends for?
Yeah.
And now we're going to ask the lady behind the bar to come out from behind the bar, Alexandra Ross.
Sorry,
it's Alexandra. Okay. Toth.
So last month I was at an event, and then for that event I wrote a specific poem that related to kind of the event, and I wanted to read this poem again because of the serious topic of this poem. In a way, it's kind of like a modern retelling of Medusa's story. Now, there are different variations out there of Medusa's story, and in recent years on social media has brought out like a specific version of what happened to Medusa, which was where she was like a shunned victim. So in her story, just for like some people might not know, so I'll tell this version of the story. So Medusa was sexually assaulted in Athena's temple by Poseidon. And in revenge, Athena actually ended up cursing her. That's how she turned to the Gorgon. So like the stone, turning people to stone with like the snakes on her head and stuff. So there are parts of this poem that relate to like specific words and stuff that you would relate to Medusa as well. So this poem is called Rebirth of Medusa. I picked up a book in water stones. I admired the blurb and recognized Medusa. I wonder which side the story will take. I've heard many variations. She was portrayed either as an evil villain or a shunned victim. The storyline was the latter, the shunned victim. I tell myself that I'm all right. But now my shaking hand says the opposite. I tried to shut it out, but I am brought back to those memories. The ones that my brain kept in a cage as a sign of protection. This cage now cracked. And I am brought back to memories of my first year self in college. So naive, so stupid. The incident that scared me for eternity. First year of college, invited to a house party. The place filled with drunkenness. The aura vibrated with warning lights. I should have never went, but I was a people pleaser. The word no felt strange on my tongue. My friend begged me to stay, and so I did. Her boyfriend handed me a drink to relax myself. I thanked him. The music took over my body, and I felt weightless. The warning aura grew. Who am I? Where is my friend? Her boyfriend dragging me upstairs. My friend needed me. Blurred vision, my friend nowhere in sight. Locked doors, only the sound of music in 8D and the drum-like beats of my heart. Clothes off, where are they? On the floor. Dirty hands all over me like stained weapons.
sharp pain, my skin crying in agony. Silent screams, click, doors unlocked. Alone, shaking, my body frozen, a stone cold statue. Words thrown at me, is that my friend's voice? I listen, slut, bitch, whore, snake. With tear-stained eyes, I plead for help. Her ocean blue eyes no longer calming, instead trapping me on the ocean floor, left to drown alone, shunned, isolated. I return to the present and replace the book on the shelf. I close the mental gate protecting the memory to forget my friend Athena, her boyfriend Poseidon, and Medusa's reincarnation. Thank you.
Thank you, Alexandra, for your incredible bravery. Wow. Thank you. Jeepers. Okay, I'm going to go back online to Zoom, and we'll have Clive, please.
Hello again. Right, now for something completely different, as they say. This is a totally serious poem called What's in a Name? Imagine if it had been licorice who flew too close to the sun, all sorts of things would be different. If the philosopher Plato had relationships named after him, oh yes, it's a Plato-Nick relationship, would sound entirely normal. If dubious Caesar had led Roman armies, would anything have changed? Imagine a musical called Squeeze Us Twice, Superstar. How would Judith and Harriet figure in that? Could good King Senseless Bastard have been the King George III's inspiration? It would explain a lot. What would have happened if Fellatio Nelson had lived? Would we have seen Napoleon blown apart? How different would the world look now if Christopher the Numbnuts had explored? And how was Captain James cooked? The incredibly prolific Wolfgang Habadeyoff Mozart would have composed considerably fewer masterpieces. We would have had peace for our time, thanks to the Prime Minister Neville Chamberpot. Who was Joseph Goebbels? The Goon Show would have been very different with a hairy threesome. Eunuch Powell would not have had the balls to spout shameless racist shit. Rivers of blood? That's what happens when they chop your knackers off, me old mucker. Bored Toucan would have been found. He couldn't fly too far. He would have had a large bill from his lawyers and still would have been caged. Maggie Flasher may have been arrested before she could crush the unions. And Squirrel Smith would have been an actual rodent rather than just being called a filthy rat. Imagine if selfish Presley had told Colonel Parker to sling his hook and kept all the money. And on the subject of music, would people have listened to Attila Black or Peculiar Clark? What if Bingo Starr had won so much at the game he never played the drums? And as for modern politics, Phony Blair and George Dafters of Brosh were pretty well named. Now we have the era of Gone Astray Gomp in the States and Deer Farmer in the UK, with Fishing Umac no longer causing a stink. And still the world keeps on turning. We just have to hope that Hadabia Putin remains reasonably sober and doesn't press the button. If only Rottenreimer had dedicated his entire life to writing awful poetry.
Thanks, Clive. We needed that giggle there now. We'll stick to Zoom and we'll go to Tracy.
Hello, I'm going to keep myself unseen because I can't see your eyes, and I want to see your eyes. So a little context. This poem was written in kind of a one session go, light editing, so it's still super raw, And it's around this fourth, this discovery of the fourth season of a woman's life. We have maiden, we know mother, and we know crone, but there's a fourth called Maga, M-A-G-A. And she's the feminine version of the magician, the mage. So the title of this is Maga, Maga, Reclaimed. The alternative title is Hagseed, Tondric, Eco, Erotica. My body is a holy thing, a host of sacred scars, weathered and brined, shining naked in an empty field. I am Magala, the Madge, not yet crone, telling stories of experience, dancing with the elms. My body is a holy thing, the voice of the dry cunt, singing the song of the bloodless womb with all the hot lightning stars. I am autumn changing, the gale coming, good compost rotting, rotting. My body is a holy thing, still ringing like a bell tolling in the gloaming, burnished from all the lovers loving. I am now wombless, childless, a grandmother to the world and my weeping woundlings. My body is a holy thing, an alive thing, vulva tingling, jingling, choosing, making love with the everything.
Thank you, Tracy. And now, Colm Scully, will you make your way up here?
Thanks, Rosie. I just wanted to read a poem actually tonight by Mary Coveney. Some of you might know Mary. She died there last month. She used to come here and back along. And in fact, she was the judge on the five-word challenge international competition back a few years ago. And she was a wonderful poet and a fantastic artist. If you get a chance to ever see her paintings, and a brilliant poet. And this poem I'm going to read, she actually won the Listowel single poem prize with this in 2008. It's called Our Time. Outside the school window, silken dandelion seeds rose, offering our floating thoughts skywards. We sweated inside moss-stitched jumpers, watched chalk dust dance in the high window sunlight. Encrusted in jam jars, little gardens dribbled with tropical rain. Peas sprouted on damp paper. Crackled maps hung with blue-veined continents, and our hands held inked estuaries, deltas, floodplains. Across the pink mountains of our thumbs, red cane welts ran. Held cradled in our laps, palms stiffened and throbbed with pain. Our eyes slid sideways along dried floorboards to where the cane sat, pointing like a gun. The clock ticked, inched towards three. A dandelion head quivering with our time. We held our breaths.
Thank you, Colm, and thank you, Marie. Now we'll have Ciarán McCarty.
How are you? Nice one. Lovely to listen to you tonight. It's called Liberate or Indoctrinate. To say youth is wasted on the young is a rich comment from men and women who've made adulthood a shameful enterprise. an operation in disowning your ideals so to quieten the mind in moments of indulgence that cripple others. The more you lose, the more you have to gain. Your aspirations strangled softly, passed over in silence, sacrificed for the security of servitude. Making peace with the devil you know and waging war on your intuition. Equipped with a wealth of cheap thrills that stimulate the brain while the conscience is gagged behind the shut doors of the mind so efficiently its screams are stifled to barely butter breath. No change comes because the messenger that brings the most vital of news from the brain to the heart is pleasuring himself behind the eyes at base camp, watching porn, while in some Hollywood basement a young woman is pinned to a bed to bring you the season finale, and you recognize her, for she has sold her love for money in the same way that you have. You are a cat seeking cream and will take it at any cost, to you, to any unknown face, to the earth. In the same way a heroin addict would sell his mother for a hit. Your skin suffers no needles. Your addictions are safer, for they are state-sponsored and corporately endorsed, and they were built for you. But safer for who? Only those who sought safety so long they became shrouded in comfort, which sat in their souls so long their aches began to numb. A dull sensation where nothing hurts is clutched to like a mother clutches her child as it is ripped from her by a soldier. And your well-fed ego reassures all that you deserve until your excesses are primal. Now your excesses control you and you are always in want and seldom in need and never able to distinguish. For you, your people, or for any stranger. You fear strangers as though they might take your children. A stranger might take your children because they have never been given anything by you or any of your esteemed colleagues or friends. Your children could break your illusion of reality, and you would hate them for it. Could melt the ice your heart is set in, and so they are feared. Indoctrinate them. Introduce them to your esteemed colleagues and friends. Liberate them and dismiss their insights, for they are too young. I and many, many alike are children of yours. I want to love you, but you hate me, so I can't. So I'll chant. I'm too young till I die. I'm too young till I die. I know I am, I'm sure I am. I'm too young till I die. Too young till I die, I'm too young till I die. I know I am, I'm sure I am, I'm too young till I die. Thank you.
Thank you, Ciarán. And I know you whispered a name in my ear, but I didn't catch it. So what's the name? Would you like to come up and do a poem? Alan, is it? Alice.
Well, this is a poem, just a bit of background. Well, for 13 years I've been sailing dinghy boats, mostly down Kinsale, and the sea yielded a lot of examples for describing higher existence, spiritual awakening, that kind of stuff, which is a journey I started at least 2018, 2019. I started to explore new ways of existing, basically. And this sort of, I tried to describe what that experience is of growing, basically. So, the wind spirit. I float like a seagull above the rough waves, watching the crests and troughs rise and fall, rise and fall. And souls' faces in the bubbles of the foamy sea smile and frown with every rise and fall, thrown about without end. And I see all this from above, floating on the spirit. I can feel the wind, but not see it. I know not where it comes or where it goes. All I know is to watch the waves and twist here and turn there my feathered wings to stay put midair. A beautiful piece, a beautiful place, and the wind is flowing stronger now. I can do no other but rise higher with it. The rush of sound of crashing dark waves grows dimmer. All that remains is sight and light, wind and peace. There we go.
Thank you, Alice. We just have three more poets left, so we're going to go back online. And Brian, please.
Thank you very much. I'm not going to be on camera. This poem got accepted into Finn Hall's. It's the wrong poem. Into Finn Hall's recently published anthology called Ain't No Deadbeats Around Here. It's called Clash Pit. This poem was born of afterbirth from a dream, a Lazarus pit, which was once a pearlescent ocean of human being fear. People who look in mirrors with eyes wide open while pretending to be blind, while witnessing everything they never wanted to see about themselves. They lie about the color of their irises as if flowers could choose what colors their petals will display. Before the days of dating apps, when people had to describe who they were as if life was a poem and a personal ad wedged between help wanted and real estate listings. Newsprint paper printed with ink that smelled of burning paraffin, wafting into olfactory senses with verbal pheromones like if you like pina coladas and getting caught in the rain, the premise of many early rom-coms. Before the days of keyboards and laptops, people would construct these messages with pen and paper, often editing and re-editing, like a poet submitting the same poem to multiple journals, getting rejected and rejected and rejected. This was before people walked into businesses and strip malls to make videos in front of fake backgrounds to verbalize what they might write in a personal ad with faces and TJ Maxx wardrobes on screen. The scripts for such screenplays would be rife with what they felt they could get away with saying, which would likely be fantasy versions of their existences for audiences of strangers who wrote and performed their own Oscar-worthy scripts, hoping for an afternoon at a coffee house, which might lead to dinner at a bistro, which might lead to how about a nightcap, or your place or mine, or the morning after, or the clashes, should I stay or should I go? Should I stay or should I go now? Should I stay or should I go now? If I go, there will be trouble, and if I stay, it will be double. Lies are sleep wiped from eyes and hastily made decisions and tears rolling down cheeks dripping into bathroom sinks before a single tooth is brushed with an index finger. The rush of water exiting the faucet sounds like a waterfall crashing upon a psyche. This puree of crime swirls down the drain through the water system, spilling into a Lazarus pit of anything, everything, and nothing, while the perp stands at the edge deciding to dip a toe into something that might help achieve something that might resemble immortality. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian. And now we will go to Sue Blue.
What a night. I find it hard to follow. I found it hard to choose for tonight as well, but I went with the five-word poem from last year in November. I won't tell you the five words because I don't want to put your focus on them. Add flames to fire. Black is the night, an upside-down pint of Beamish. Snow blankets mountain slopes. Campfire casts a tiny spot of light, quivering among rugged ridges into foothills dark and vast, where we sit sweating in bearskins, mucklucks pulled under to cushion the cold from below. Stories and songs break from pores, drip from our tongues, add their flames to the fire, circle the hearth in a ring of friendship. Black is the night above our heads, white the surrounding cover. Our laughter ricochets in echoes, beams a spark of hope into the bleak mountain side.
Mucklucks was Jeff's word on the night. Remember that, Jeff?
Probably.
Yeah. Oh, was it was, yeah.
Mucklucks. It's a good word, yeah. Thank you, Sue. And our final poet for the night, taking us away, is Luke O'Rourke.
That's okay, I'm going to take it off anyway.
No, you can't really.
No?
Yeah.
Sorry, no. Okay.
It's tricky because the two of them work together, kind of.
Cool. Gonna have two hands for this one. Yeah, thanks for hosting this, guys. I haven't been here in years, and it's really nice to be back in this room with a bunch of amazing poets. This one is maybe appropriately still unnamed. I finished it about 5 minutes ago. I don't know you, but who am I to argue with an easeful nervous system? Who am I to close my nose to a scent that sounds in me like angels singing warmth in harmony? To turn my tongue from a taste like wild foraged fairy potion tea and the slow falling drop of raw, unlabeled local honey? Who am I not to take off my clothes, dive in and swim in conversation that flows like the blood and waters within? But to tell you of the beauty in your smile and in what makes you smile? Not while I can, with life so fleeting, to savor stillness in the fire of your eyes. Not to dance with the butterflies. Are you kidding me? True, I don't know you, and I don't know how many pages there'll be, but this is at least a little chapter I'd like to read.
What a night. Wow, I nearly cried a couple of times, I definitely laughed. I'm so honoured to be part of this community. You're all amazing. Thank you for coming out, for sharing your poems. Tom Hirons, wow. Thank you. And Jeff Cotterill, yay. Thank you. Paul, thank you for